This week, we're going to do a Q&A, and where I thought we would start, it's always up to you where we go with these things, but where I thought we would start was any specific questions about our subject last week, which was education and how we educate our children. That is a big topic. There are a lot of things to bite off and to chew on with that topic, and I don't know if you felt like we covered it satisfactorily or not. So I just wanted to put that out there because I could certainly understand if you wanted to go over some very specific questions related to education. But we don't have to. The things we've covered so far this semester, besides just the process itself, we've talked about the church, how one should be led, how one should be started, and how we should make a decision about joining them. We talked about dating, marriage, about children, when to have them, how many to have, and how to educate them. And then just so you know where we're going next, because if you ask any questions about this, I'm just going to say, come back later. The rest of the semester, we're going to talk about work, money, and time. How do we work? How much do we work? Money, what do we do with it? How much is enough? How much is too much? What do you do when you have not enough or not too much? And how do you think about those things? And then time. How do we appropriate it? How do we make wise decisions about how to use our time? How do we balance our time with competing priorities? And within that, we'll put the topic of recreation, since recreation is about the use of time. How do we use our recreational time in terms of, well, it really, that is the question. How do we use our recreational time? Are there things we should and shouldn't do, should and shouldn't see, should and shouldn't listen to? How much of those are law and how much of those are wisdom? And within the category of wisdom, are there things that we shouldn't do or shouldn't see or shouldn't listen to, not because they're not because they should be excluded in and of themselves, but because it is unfathomable that we could be doing all the things with our time that we ought to do and still have time, money, energy, affections for these other things. So we're going to talk about priorities. How do we balance priorities? So that's what we've covered, and that's where we're headed. And today we're just going to catch up. And if you've not been in a Sunday school with me before, I think most of you have, about every 4 or 5 weeks we just do a Q&A Sunday, which is an opportunity to either get questions clarified that have come up over the last few weeks that we didn't really have time to ask or cover, or to dig more deeply into a particular topic, or just for someone, usually Stephen, to ask some off-the-wall question that has nothing to do with anything that we've covered, but that he thinks is good for controversy and getting me brought up on charges. So that's the framework for today. Where would you all like to begin? Hopefully not with the controversy and the charges. So all I could do on that front, because I think it's a very valid point, all I could do is for example, walk you through the rationale of our decision-making process over this past year and kind of how I feel like these things play in. So we have 3 kids, but we only have one who's old enough to be ready for school, and that was Nathan. And so when it was time to think through, what are we going to do for educating him this year? And again, let me stop and take my rabbit trail and reemphasize, this year. It's a decision that has to be revisited every year, and in some cases, every semester. And you have to be willing to change, to ignore those sunk costs. After 6 months, it's a lot easier than after 17 years. But to ignore the sunk costs and think, what is the best decision for us to make now? So for Nathan, so that's one thing, is be ready to reevaluate the decision all the time. The other thing is, when you come into this decision, I don't think you can take anything off the table. I don't think you can start the decision by saying, this is a non-starter. Now, we talked about last week, if you have the theological conviction that parents are not just primarily, but entirely responsible for the complete education, not just overseeing it, but providing it, of their children. If you have that position, then obviously you'll look at that differently, and you'll say, look, the only choice we have is homeschooling. The other two are not theologically okay. Public school, private school, not okay. That's a very different way to make a decision. I disagree with you, but I don't disagree with you enough to come argue with you, right? So that's okay, but I just want you to know that's not my position. I think that public, private, or homeschooling, none of them are by definition unbiblical, sinful, or even unwise choices. You've got to get into a greater level of detail before you figure out where the wisdom's at. So with Nathan, the decision, and you know, I'm glad that children start young, because you never want to make bad decisions for your children, but when you're talking about where your children's going to go to kindergarten, you also don't feel like if you make the second wisest choice instead of the first wisest choice, this is the moment where it's make or break on whether or not they're ever going to get into medical school, right? It's true. That is very true. Like it is. It's an Atlanta thing. Well, it's this way in Charlotte too, though, where we think that we can somehow make a decision. And I'm not talking about parents that just whatever happens, happens, go with the flow. They don't have any sense of intentionality. They don't care so much about the, like, the people who actually care and think and are thoughtful and make decisions, who somehow think that you could make such a bad decision here that, you know, your child's going to come home, you know, and blowing bubbles in their milk's the best they can do. Like, my mom used to say, whenever we would have to miss school because she would decide we were going on a family vacation or something was happening, and my parents didn't care all that much about me missing a day or two of school when I was in elementary school, even high school. But one time I remember this school secretary really getting into it with my mom about, you know, you don't have the right to do this, you know, to take your own child because you think this thing is more important. And my mom said, I'm so sorry, I forgot this was the day you're teaching brain surgery. And that was her attitude the whole way through. It was like, there is nothing you are going to learn in a day or a week of school that you can't learn a day or a week later. Like, it's just okay. So we need to lighten up a little bit. But we need to be thoughtful about the decision. So with Nathan, how do we walk through this process? Well, I told you the things that you have to consider are the kid. This is not necessarily in the order of priority. The kid, the family, the wife, mom, the money, the interests of said kid, and the ability of the mom and of the family to fill in whatever gaps exist, because every option we make has gaps. We all agreed on that. You know, if you decide to homeschool your 11th grader, you're probably going to have gaps in terms of your ability as a parent to academically cover the content, right? That's a gap. It's not a problem. It's just a gap that you got to fill. If you decide to send your kid to public school in such and such circumstances, then the gap you're probably going to have is the connection of what seems like non-theological truths with all of the theological truths that we know are integrated there. So when somebody says, the reason that we need to learn math is blah, 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 and what math teaches us is blah, blah, blah about the universe, there needs to be a parent or someone over here who says, well, actually, for those of us who are believers, we know that the reason math is the way it is because it demonstrates these truths about God. And God says these things in Scripture which are true, and look how that correlates to math. That's a gap. It's not a problem. It's a gap. You have to be intentional about filling it. So whatever option you pick has gaps, and you've got to evaluate your ability to fill those gaps. So those are the criteria we talked about last week. So when it came to Nathan, well, what do we know about the kid? Well, he's a boy. Nathan is a boy's boy, boy, boy. So the thing about sitting and being still and listening for long periods of time, tremendously problematic for Nathan. I myself, particularly at this age, in light of other things I observe about Nathan, I don't think this is a condition that needs to be medicated or, you know, get therapy to get him out of it. I think he's a boy, and we're okay with that. And so part of our decision-making process is he's a boy. Kate, you look at Kate and you say, Kate, I want you to sit in the same place for 11 hours and don't make any noises. Okay, Dad, that is not Nathan. So we had to think about that, all right? Family. We have a lot of things going on. We were in the process of moving last year when the first decision needed to be made. We were recent in moving to Atlanta, but we have a tremendous advantage that I, in general, work from home. So my office is downstairs, and pretty much I stay out of it and do my own thing. But when you hear the noises of the junta beginning their rebellion upstairs, I can make my way up the stairs and make my presence known once again. So me working from home was a consideration that needed to be considered. Also, as silly and trivial as this sounds, the layout of the house that we moved into, where the children could be home all day, and I can still work from home, and everybody can get their own work done, and even so far as the way that our upstairs is configured, Daphne has the ability to teach one child and to observe but not be distracted or bothered by other children. That's actually a logistical consideration, because if you live in a 700-square-foot apartment with one main room and you have four children and one of them needs school and three of them don't, you might factor this thing a little bit differently, right? That's just reality, and that's okay, all right? Then the wife-mom decision. Well, this was the one that was the most surprising of all to me, because it starts with a conversation that says, what are your thoughts on this? What would you like to do? And the answer that as a father you expect to hear on what I would like to do is, I would like to send our child to boarding school in Angola and have him return to me when he's 18. But that was not the answer that I was given. The answer I was given was, I would be interested in trying homeschool with Nathan, or at least at the early stage it was, I'm not opposed to it. I don't think we need to rule it out. I think that might could actually work. So then we had to go look at our other options. We looked at public school in our area, and we looked at private school. Well, we finished looking at private school. Some of us are in a very unfortunate position where you don't make enough money to be able to send your kids to private school, and you make too much money for any private school to say, we'd like to help you send your kids to private school. It's a little sweet spot. Some of us are in it, and that was kind of the end of that discussion for now. Interests. Well, you need to cover your ears for a minute. I am blessed to have a wife who has a passion for liberal arts and for education. And so even though she chose to major in something that isn't a tremendous contribution to the economic well-being of the world, music, she chose to major in something and take interest in things that are tremendously valuable to educating children. And to being a well-rounded, educated person. Love for literature. Love for history. Love for contextualizing the things that we should learn in a way that kids, I think, of all ages would be really excited about that, because she's excited about it. So her interests align with what I think it's most important for our children to learn right now. I think our children need to learn to read and to love reading. They need to learn to learn and to love learning, to figure things out, to ask questions, to be inquisitive. These are the things that I want the children to learn. She is particularly interested in those things, and so it's a great fit there. If Nathan were to decide he wants to pursue a career in industrial engineering, some things about her interests in teaching might not align anymore. And so we would make a different decision. You see the panicked look on her face? Does that mean with math? And then obviously that ties into ability as well. So I told you we looked at the private schools. We didn't feel like there was an economical option that had a commute that was good for our family. So you can always find a school you can afford. You really can. And it may be the best option. In our case, because of the distance of the schools involved that we could afford, it really, those gaps were gaps we didn't want to fill, or we weren't really prepared to fill. we looked at the local public schools, and a couple things happened that were interesting. Because I think as I mentioned to you before, my best educational experiences in my whole life were in public school. I was homeschooled, I went to private schools, and I went to public schools, and by far, my best experiences socially and academically were in public school. So I am predisposed toward thinking, oh, I'll show these Reformed Presbyterians, I'll send my kid to public school. So I made some phone calls to our local elementary school, which has a stellar reputation. We actually, at least last year, had lived in a place where one of the desirable elementary schools was right walking distance from us. And I called several months before the enrollment began, and with my nicest, best first impression voice I could make, explained that had a rising kindergartner, that I'm one of those sort of weird, overly interested parents, and I wondered when I would be able to meet the people that would potentially be his teachers, and what the process was for reviewing the kindergarten curriculum. Because even if they can't tell me who the teacher is, which I understand because they a lot of times do those at the last minute, but let me understand the curriculum. Let me spend some time looking over that, see what's going to be covered. I don't need daily lesson plans. What are the five things you're trying to teach my child this year, and what are the mechanisms that you'll use to teach them? I was told we don't do that. I was just flat out told no. And I made my request a couple different ways, and I called on a different day and got a different person and made the request more different ways and was essentially told, no, you cannot see what we are going to teach your child. Hear me very clearly on this. That can't be a deal breaker for everybody. Not everybody is in a position because of the other trade-offs and things where they could say, well, then we're done, right? It just shows you a gap. Okay, I can't see it in advance. What are the ways that I have to cover that gap on the back end? That's what that could tell you. In our situation, because of the other positives, that meant we ruled out that public school for that year for Nathan. The other issue was this school, despite its this great reputation, their kindergarten classes average 34 students per class. That would not be fair to Nathan or, more importantly, to the teacher to put him in that class with 33 other children with one teacher and one aide. So that for us, again, what I want you to get out of this is not, okay, if they won't show you the curriculum, you can't send your kid there. Or, okay, if there's 34 kids in the class, you can't send... I'm not saying that. I'm saying you put it on the matrix and you figure out the pros and cons and the gaps and the weaknesses and which ones you're able to cover. So when we look back at our options for Nathan, the public school was an option, but we couldn't see the curriculum in advance. The class size was, we thought, too big to be good for him. The private school was either too far or too expensive. And we were in a house that is conducive to homeschooling a little boy for kindergarten, and our family was in a place where we can handle that. The other two children don't have activities away from the house unless we schedule them. So we could build the rest of our family life around knowing Daphne needs these windows for homeschooling. That was the way we were able to build that. So that was the choice that we made. And then the second year, the decision becomes a little easier because now the homeschooling's a known quantity. We know what this requires of us and what that situation is like. So then it's not so much that you have to reevaluate this between kindergarten and first grade. You do a little bit of evaluating the kid, but that's from the perspective of, is he missing something? Can you tell that... is there a lack of social interaction because we've not filled that gap some other way? Is there an educational gap because Daphne's interests and priorities are in these areas and so she focuses on that, but we're forgetting this other thing? You evaluate that stuff, you plug those gaps, but at the end of the day, not much had changed and this still felt like the best decision for us. That could change. It could change with Nathan. It could change year by year. It can change with Kate because she's a different kid. It could change with Savannah because she's a different kid. Or it might come down to the interest and ability in homeschooling tops off at two children. So which one of these three will we exile somewhere else to brew, right? All of those things are okay. But you've got to walk through those decisions. Or maybe it becomes, look, now Nathan's at a point where he needs X, Y, Z. Daphne is not able or willing or comfortable to provide all of that. I work from home. Is there a way I can come upstairs 45 minutes a day, 2-3 days a week, whatever it is, to fill in that gap? Right? We have other families. This is how the whole homeschool kind of co-op thing started. You realize there's other families who have a similar problem that you have, that not everybody's mom or dad has a master's degree in math. Oh, but it turns out one person's does. Let's send all our kids to their house. We'll call that math, right? You can do that. The most important thing is when you are making the decision, identify the ramifications of that decision, the gaps, and then how do I fill them in? How do I solve that problem? And that's how you end up making a good decision here. And even if you make a bad decision, or something either because you use bad process or because you use the right process and you were just wrong about something, a bad semester, a bad year, a bad 3 years in elementary school, middle school, or high school has yet to prove, you know, fundamentally deadly to a human being in this country. I mean, it just doesn't. Education is so important, and yet somehow we overvalue education in this country as if it is the only thing that matters or even the most important thing. You know, character and work ethic will beat education every time. They really will. So if you have character and work ethic and you add education, that's amazing. That's great. But education, I know so many people with educations without character and without work ethic, and they're much worse off. That is a much more problematic place to be.
That's what's coming out of college now.
Narrowness.
Yeah, and I'm using gaps broadly. It's a good point, because gaps may be something that's missing. It also may be an actual problem that needs to be overcome. For example, I overheard a small portion of a conversation, and I'll probably get it wrong what you all were talking about, but it made me think about one of the challenges of homeschooling with older children is that an older child, unlike Nathan the kindergartner, is smart enough to recognize that in homeschooling, all deadlines are arbitrary. Every deadline is because mom or dad said, this is due Thursday. And if mom just pulled Thursday out of the air, mom could just as easily pull next Thursday out of the air. So let's go work on mom about realigning her priorities and her schedule, right? That's actually a problem, not just a gap, a problem. And so you have to figure out, how do we solve this? Because what you don't want is a child who has this wonderful homeschool education, has character, has work ethic, has education, and then gets to college or gets to the workforce, and someone says, this is due on Thursday, and they think, Thursday, Friday, Monday, whatever. That doesn't work in the world, right? And so that's a problem that you have to figure out how to overcome. An actual especially with older children, we all of us could teach most, not like classrooms of 30 children. I don't mean this as an insult to actually trained teachers. Most of us could teach the content of elementary school to most children and be okay. Everybody agree with that? But as you start to get these older children and they start to get it, yeah, they're things that you learned in middle school or high school. When was that? Have you used them since? Right? Because they told me that I would use trigonometry in grocery shopping and in these other things. And I got to tell you, I just use a calculator. Right? So there are these real problems. And again, they have to go on the matrix. What is the problem? What is the cost of that problem? What are the ways I can mitigate that problem? And is that enough? And then if it's not enough, because every once in a while it won't be, then you have to figure out how big is this problem. Yeah, I wish that my kid had the opportunity to do X, Y, Z, and I agree it would be better if our education option didn't limit them from that. But is that a big enough problem to flip the decision another direction, right? Because it's a great point. There's not just gaps. There are problems. Social, narrowness you mentioned. You know, you're going to be exposed to a wide variety of intellectual ideas in the world. And it's a problem if you are educated in a place where you are insulated from ideas with which you disagree. And if you're not taught how to disagree, how to think through disagreements, not just with a visceral reaction, but with an intellectual reaction. Wait, that doesn't work because articulate defense. Those are problems that you have to look for. What is my solution? How am I going to handle that, and how do I prioritize it? And those priorities will change with the age of the kid, right? Because something like that, tremendously unimportant for my kindergartner. Very, very important for my high schooler. Because they're going to walk away from my household into a world that will disagree with them far more often than it agrees with them. And that will look to destroy them if there is any sign of weakness or error. So they have to be prepared for this world that will disagree that much in that way. So then that matters a lot. Right? And then I have to reshuffle priorities and think through that. Jake, did you have a... In the context that we all have to be really vigilant about these decisions and thoughtful, I would also say we need to be careful not to overvalue some factors. So that matters. The content your kids are being taught matters. The method by which they are being taught matters. I think we need to be careful that we don't make that the first and only thing on the board and then rule out options just because of this. Again, if I have a 11th grader who shows an interest in math and science and a desire to pursue a pre-medical career, I am doing them a disservice if I rule out any science education options that don't share my worldview. But I've created a giant problem or gap that I now have to figure out how to mitigate. You know, I went to a college, it was surprisingly enough, the College of the Associate Reformed Presbyterian Denomination. It is the denominational college. And you will not find a more highly regarded undergraduate science faculty in the state of South Carolina than at Erskine, which means you will not find a more pagan, liberal, than at that school. You had to know if you cared about the relationship between faith and science, between faith and reason, if you wanted to engage the sciences in a theologically rigorous and honest way, you had to know when you were going to Erskine, you are not going to get that in the classroom, period. What is the way I'm going to solve that? And some of us had ways of solving that. That's how actually several student clubs got started and philosophy of science class that we got added to the course offerings because we found a philosophy professor who had enough science background to justify teaching it and who was brilliant, theologically conservative, reformed, brilliant. And so we went, petitioned him and petitioned the registrar and the academic dean to get a philosophy of science class added as a science credit so that we could get some real scientific learning, you know, to help fix these other problems that we were having. So it is really important that we think about content, that it goes on the matrix. We need to be careful that it doesn't become the one true test. That's what I would say about any of these things. None of them can be the one true test. You can make a decision as a family that for us, this item is so important. It is unfathomable that we would choose something that doesn't have this. You can do that as a family. You're completely, it's not even unwise. If you make that decision together, that's great. The reason you can't say it's the one true test is because you can't then look at my family and say, No, that violates the one true test. You're out. You're unwise. You made a foolish decision. You don't know anything. You don't know how much was in this matrix. You don't know how much we wrestled and weighed with these various things and how we prioritize the ramifications, the problems, the gaps in our family based on our situation. You don't know that. So be gracious when we make a different choice than you make. Dave?
You talked a while ago about not just the academic portion of their education.
For how many of you does a rigorous work ethic come naturally? You were so liar. Other people in this room could have raised their hand and I wouldn't know any better. You, sir. How many of us our default position is, I really want to work hard because hard work is its own reward. Yeah, they don't make men like that anymore is what they say. We are responsible for educating the whole of the person from that work ethic and the character and the faith, as well as what we're referring to as education, though education covers the whole thing. When we use education, it's shorthand for the book learning that we got to do, right? We absolutely are responsible for the whole picture. And by God's grace, we can accomplish the whole picture, right? Because God is gracious. I think that's right, but I think you can go a few levels above that to figure out where the problem is. I mean, the problems are in that we value the wrong things. As a culture, we value the wrong things. So we care more about having an A than about a grade being true and reflecting something real. So we have grade inflation. So suddenly a C is terrible. Because everybody should make A's. No, everybody should not make A's if grades had meaning. What's that? That's right. You make up your own grades. I'll tell you what. When I got to RTS, and I was the first institution I'd ever been to that was on a 7-point scale, and I think I got like a 90 on the first assignment, and it was a B-. This place is broken. This is all broken. We value the wrong thing. So we value recognition more than we value the substance of what should be recognized. So, and this is low-hanging fruit. I'm not covering any new ground here. But why do we give all of our kids trophies when their soccer team went 0-15? Why? The reason why is that we value the recognition more than we value the substance of what should be recognized. So you should be able to look at a kid and say, you did not win. I love you. You are still a valuable person. You did not win. And it is okay. You know? And then when somebody does win, we look at how they won and we praise and we how they conduct themselves in winning. All that stuff's really, really important, but it is also perfectly okay to look at the kid who won and say, you won! Good job! Feels good to win, doesn't it? That's why we work hard. That's why we try to win, because winning feels good. It creates something in us. It points us to something better in that emotional state than losing. Now with my kid who lost. Let me tell you how we can appropriate loss and how we think about loss and how God uses loss to make us, right? It's okay. Value the thing that is to be recognized, not the recognition, but don't throw recognition out the window either. Just don't give it to people who don't deserve it. Colleges are this way. It's so stupid. It is so stupid that every student who goes to college gets an academic scholarship. Just lower your prices. Just lower the prices and don't say to the mediocre kid steeped in mediocrity, well, you can't afford to be here, but we're going to let you be here because of your outstanding academic performance. No, the truth is you can afford to be here. So lots of ways. We do this as grown-ups. We do this with children. We prioritize recognition over the substance of the thing to be recognized. And that's just one of the whole, and it's gone out of favor now, but these things always trail off slowly. They don't just disappear. But the whole self-esteem movement with children, that we need to say wonderful things to our children about our children so that they will think well about themselves.
People are important because they're persons.
That's right.
Not because of their...
Somebody's not valuable. Somebody's not worthwhile because of a particular action. You know, you want to see where this is screwed up is when you go to celebrities and sports superstars for political opinions or for moral direction. What? The guy can catch a football and I'm supposed to care who he's voting for? How does that even make sense? Well, it's because we have conflated. Well, he's a great person. She's a great person. Look, she was in a movie. We need her to advocate for this cause. And because she's advocating for it, it's obviously great because she's great. Why? Because she was in a movie. And we need a responsive graciousness. So, you know, what I'm beating you guys over the head about is when you're the one who makes the decision, don't lash out at other people or criticize other people for the decisions that they make. But we also need that next level of graciousness. It's the gentle answer that turns away wrath, which means there was wrath to start with. And then a gentle answer totally changes the direction of it. And sometimes we are going to say things like, well, I just don't see how anybody could. And then they're going to name the thing that you do. And what would be wonderful is if you, when you hear that, could say, huh, tell me more about why you feel that way. Don't be defensive. Don't be angry, because this is the kind of interbody teaching opportunity that we now have, right? Where if we can have a civil discussion about, I don't see how anybody could send their kid to public school. Well, there's a couple ways you can react to that. The way most people react to it is to say nothing. Huh, okay. And then to go to someone else and say, so-and-so is so inconsiderate and disrespectful, and right? That's what our tendency would be. And what I'm saying is we all benefit from that inner body learning if the person who was offended, rightly so, would say, I'm curious what brought you to that conclusion? Because that's really a decision we've wrestled with. I'd love your insight. And then make a conversation out of it, and you learn. Yep, I would have a second column for what sacrifice is required here, right? Because everything sacrifices something. So if it's this, if I'm spending money on private school, then that's going to have financial impact on my family, and there are going to be financial sacrifices that we have to make. If it's homeschooling, there's going to be sacrifices. If mom is staying home doing the homeschooling, there's going to be sacrifices for mom in terms of energy, time, ability to do other responsibilities, and those are sacrifices that have to be thought about. If dad has to come upstairs from work, as I was talking about, and do this, then that requires sacrifices for me and, in some cases, my employer, because I have to be able to say to my boss, these are two 45-minute windows a week where, in general, I really am just out of pocket. And those sacrifices have to go in. What are we able to sacrifice, and then what are we willing? Because I don't believe that when I talked about wife and mom, assuming she's the one that's primarily going to execute the homeschooling, there are plenty of scenarios where I think she could say, this is not my first choice, but I am willing to do this. I think there are scenarios where she could say, I don't want to do this, but I am willing to do this. And I think that she, in terms of giving honest input and giving honest opinion, and then a husband, in terms of having the responsibility, have to make the decision about whether or not that is the particular sacrifice we're going to make. Because I think what happens too often by default in Christian families, and particularly Reformed families, is We go into that matrix assuming that the sacrifice required of mom, well, that's just a given because that has to happen. That's the way it has to be. So I know you're about to pull your hair out and jump in the lake, but hey, that's the way it is, right? Because we can't sacrifice these other things. That is a terrible way of approaching the decision. Terrible, terrible, terrible. If you can't mitigate that feeling, if you can't fill in those gaps and correct those problems, that probably is at the top of the list. Mom is ready to pull her hair out. This is not an insignificant factor, right? That goes up here. So I guess my answer to your question is both. It does go into the matrix of what am I able to do, what am I willing to do. You have to do it at the end as well. Okay, we think we've made this decision. What is this really requiring of us? Kind of a last-minute gut check. Are we really willing to do the things that this requires? We've decided we're going to send Nathan to this school, and it's going to cost this much money, which means it's going to pull this much out of the family budget, which means the impact is actually, the way we're going to feel that impact is this. We don't take this vacation. We don't get this. We don't save that. That is the way we actually feel it. Last minute gut check. Is that really what we want? Is that what we're willing to do? So I think it's both. Other thoughts? And I would use stronger language there, because I think it's easy for us to all agree that there's no perfect solution. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. So let me use a little stronger language that some folks will disagree with. There's not even necessarily a right and a wrong. You say, well, this one's not perfect, but it's the right one for our family. It is the right one for our family. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe there's two right ones, and you're picking the one you like better, which is perfectly okay. I talk about that a whole lot.
Right? You don't know until you try it, because it's a solution at
this time. That's key. That's what I really wanted to pick up on. Some people would listen to that story and hear, what I learned is homeschooling doesn't work in our family. And what you should learn from that story is homeschooling is not good for these kids at this point, right? Like, very narrow focus, what you learn. And then when other things change, you go back into your matrix and you plug in the things that changed. But you don't just say, we're going to write off this option, right? I went to a private school with a bunch of moral degenerates and theological ineptitude, so I refuse to send my kids to private school because it's no better than public school and it's expensive. Well, that would be a terrible lesson to have learned from my experience in one private school at one particular phase of my life. Right? So, narrow lessons. Same level of involvement, same level of engagement. We have friends who are working through this decision very recently, and one of the issues came up of, if you decide you're sending your kid to a private school and then a private Christian school, what if it's a Catholic school? What do we do there? Well, actually, that's worth putting through the matrix and thinking through, because it has its pros and its cons, you know, as opposed to just saying, no, absolutely not. No, that. Again, if you take that position, that's okay. Put that in your matrix as something that you think is wise. Don't declare it as law for the rest of us. Bruce, did you have a... It goes on our matrix. It goes on our matrix. There is theoretically a line at which a majority of thoughtful, conscientious Christians would look at the public school system itself and say, we can't be here. The location of that line is wisdom and is pretty nebulous, right? I mean, would that be the one true litmus test? Well, a lot of us have the kind of visceral reaction of, yeah, it would be the one true, like, that's a step too far, and maybe it is. But maybe not, right? Because could you mitigate that? You can mitigate it with a boy, because you could say, just don't go to the bathroom all day, which works with boys. Travel with women, you find out this doesn't work. Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. We've got to be very thoughtful. We've got to pay attention to what's going on. There has to be one level of thought about it as a system, and there has to be one level of thought about it as an individual place. Right? My parents were really against public schools by the time I was in high school, just as a place that we shouldn't be. But the fact that we lived in a really small town in the Bible Belt, and we had lived there for 2 years, and so my dad, working at the hospital, had gotten to know teachers and family of teachers, and you get to, and then you find out, okay, we could probably handle that, and sure enough, we could. But that was evaluating one situation. You know, it could be very different here. Yeah. Well, that's like we go to church, so why do I need to do theological education?
Yeah. It's
And I would just repeat, that's why I think it's so important that we have these gracious conversations with one another, where not only are we careful not to judge other people's decisions with our speech, but when somebody says something that sounds like it's judging our decisions with their speech, we give them the benefit of the doubt. And we do the best we can to, instead of responding with wrath, to turn that with a gentle answer into a productive conversation. Hey, we really wrestled with that too. I'm curious how you guys came, because I really want to know more about how you came to make that decision. And what you know, which is not disingenuous, it's true, is that I really hope I'm going to find out that you just spoke way more casually and uncarefully than you should have, and you'll acknowledge that. But let's see. Let's give you the benefit of the doubt. Let's go down that road. One other thing, Bruce, just to your point that I was thinking about with public schools, especially in the South, you're going to start to see people take actions to preempt some of those problems. And I just saw this as I was working with some folks in Charlotte, which, you know, Charlotte you put in the South with an asterisk next to it because it's Newark, North Carolina. But their state board of education, and Charlotte-Mecklenburg is its own board of education. It's crazy. Anyway, they already have single-gender classrooms in their charter schools, and they are now laying the groundwork for single-gender schools in their charter schools. And what's going to happen is, God willing, this is what I expect to happen, they're going to do that, and it's going to work. Because all of the science says single gender education works. All of it says it is better, better, better for everyone. It's going to work. And then somebody's going to come along just really sneaky and craftily and say, hey, why do we reserve this effective method of education only for the elite children who make it into the charter schools? That's not fair. It should be in all of our public schools. And now suddenly, it won't happen in all the schools, but suddenly there'll be options. And suddenly parents that want to opt in will be able to opt in. And I think you're going to see these mitigations take place. Because the way that they're going, besides the fact that it's morally bankrupt, it doesn't work. It doesn't successfully educate children. Common Core doesn't work. Doesn't successfully educate children. Basing an entire education around standardized testing doesn't work. It doesn't successfully educate children. No Child Left Behind doesn't work. Doesn't successfully educate children. And there's a long trail, a tale, and it's unfortunate to see children who are effectively punished by these educational experiments that don't work. But over time, they'll get moved out of the system and they'll put into place some things that work. This is the pendulum that exists in... This is why some people think it's really important to have government focused on a very small set of things, because government likes to be heavy-handed and experiment and take control, and it causes this pendulum. And people whose interests are properly aligned make better decisions than governments who are not financially or morally or in any other meaningful way accountable for their actions. I don't mean that as a strong criticism of government. That's the reality of the nature of government. Government doesn't care if my kid ends up as some sort of problem, right? But they don't have a vested interest in the success of my child. Any other thoughts? Sure. What if this happens? Yeah. You can't put all the contingencies in your decision matrix or you'll never make a decision, right? But you do need to put ones that, if it is a real possibility that I'm going to move this year, we are seriously considering that could happen. You better believe that goes in the matrix. If there's a real possibility that I could lose my job or change jobs or be unemployed, that possibility always exists, but our company's downsizing or I'm trying to do this other thing, I need to put that on my matrix because that has a financial impact. Right? If we know we have this upcoming medical expense, if the wife is pregnant, that's a reality that has some contingencies attached to it that ought to be factored in. So absolutely. Don't think you have to contemplate every possible scenario, though, because that's a lot of people get paralyzed. Some of us are really data-driven people when we make decisions, and we feel like if we can just get more data, we would never make the wrong decision. Well, what happens is you never make a decision because you never get all the data. That's just the way it works. So you do have to draw a line in the sand where you say, you know what? this is the best decision we can make. By God's grace, we will deal with other unforeseen circumstances that come up. That's a great point. Diane?
Homeschooling. We think this is the way you're leading it, so this is what we're going to do.
This is working. Why would we change this?
Yep. Yep.
And you don't become less sure about good decisions. You become more sure about them and more confident in them.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll tell you, because she's gone now. You talk about putting contingencies in a decision matrix. My decision matrix for what we were going to do with Nathan year two had at the top of the list, Daphne's going to come to me and say, I'm not doing this anymore. That kid is crazy. Right? Like, that was what I was fully expecting, was she would homeschool him for kindergarten, and then she would come to me and say, he never sits still, he never shuts up, he never stops asking questions, he never takes no for an, I don't want to do this. And I was ready. I mean, I had a plan, because that's, and then instead she came to me and she said, this is working pretty well. I was like, well, there goes that decision matrix. We move on to another one. So, all right, we're done. See you next week.